This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
614, a nice day today as we get you through this weather thing. A chance of severe weather on Saturday has canceled the St. Patrick's Day parade in New Orleans and caused for the others to be moved to Sunday. I don't think they're going to move the one in New Orleans to Sunday because historically associated with St. Joseph's Day is Super Sunday and the Mardi Gras Indians, and I believe NOPD is going to be plenty busy with that. So I don't think they're going to move the St. Patrick's Day parade downtown to Sunday. I don't see how that could happen, but who knows? Anyway, highs of 81 today, 81 tomorrow, 79 on Saturday with that risk for severe weather in the afternoon. Then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, nice. Plenty of sunshine, highs in the upper 70s all next week, really. Maybe even a little bit cooler than that by Friday. So we know about DOGE. You know about the cuts that are being made. I would like to preface this just to put it in a political perspective that not everything President Trump does is right because he's President Trump. Not everything President Trump does is wrong because he's President Trump. Not everything anybody does is right or wrong simply because of who they are. And that applies to Elon Musk and his DOGE cuts as well. With that, we welcome in Jamie Rowan, Associate Professor of Legal Studies at UMass Amherst and Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Societies to talk about how some of the cuts that have already been made, as I understand it, could affect veterans. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Thanks for taking the time with us. Tell me about, I guess, I know we're going to talk about veterans, but generally speaking, when it comes to, they used to have this old thing, they'd say the 101st Airborne was, and it's very insensitive, I understand that, but it was, you know, kill them all, let God sort them. Okay, that's what they would say. And it seems as though when it comes to Elon Musk and his DOGE cuts, there seems to be a lot of just mass cuts here without really paying attention to what we're doing or why. Is that the way this is shaken out?
Well, when it comes to the VA, what's interesting is the memo that came out said that they want to reduce staffing to 2019 levels. That may seem logical because why did we need to hire additional people over the past 6 years and now there's over 480,000 employees? The problem is that the federal government decided to expand eligibility for health care to 400,000 new veterans, which is a great thing over the last few years. These were veterans that were not necessarily eligible for this care. And so the increase in staffing has actually decreased wait times for the VA and really improved care. And there's really good evidence of that. And so just deciding a workforce cut based on a year, 2019, doesn't show good planning. interestingly, the Republican legislators yesterday introduced bills to suggest that we could take a few months to decide whom to cut. And the Democrats actually came with a different bill that said we need to be honoring our promise to veterans, our actually legal obligation to veterans, to both in the VA, but not to fire them, and to make sure to retain any that are being part of these broad sweeping cuts. In general, the VA is getting swept up exactly as you said in just broad cuts that are not being targeted. Everyone knows there's waste in the government. But cutting jobs just to cut jobs doesn't cut waste in the government. It actually cuts necessary services for veterans.
Somebody texted in and said, as far as policy goes, Tommy, do you even know what you like? You have a lot of opinions on policy, but you never talk about what you actually think is good policy. I'll tell you right now, what is sound policy is leaving politics out of it, taking a cause and effect look at things. And as Jamie, as you just said, okay, we have 400,000 extra employees, or how many extra employees did you say?
So they hired 66,000 extra employees over the last year, and it was because there were 400,000 new veterans that they were supposed to serve.
So let's talk
policy.
And
there were severe staffing shortages.
Right, and if you want to talk policy, here's what policy makes sense to me is, first of all, thank you for your service. It's easy to say those, five words? Thank you for your service. That's easy to say. That makes you feel good about yourself. That doesn't help anybody at all. And we've talked about the treatment that veterans in this country have gotten for a long time. You can put a yellow ribbon on your car and you can say thank you for your service. But if you're not willing to put your money where your mouth is, you can shove all of that. Pardon me, Professor, but it's worthless.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. It's useless. It makes you feel good about yourself and maybe you can sleep at night, but it doesn't help a veteran that needs help. So as far as policy goes, if consistently we've not given veterans what they need and finally we started giving them what they need, or at least took a step toward giving them what they need, well, then you can't just say from a policy standpoint, oh, we hired all these extra people, got to cut them loose. No, because the veterans were underserved to begin with. You got to look at cause and effect. That's the policy I'm for, which is why you hired these people. What are they doing? You can't say that every department is filled with waste, or that you're just going to make the same thing when it comes to budgeting, make cuts across the board, because you could be cutting services that are needed and some that are useless. And that's a political situation that doesn't solve anything. I don't mean to get on my soapbox here, Professor, but somebody texted in and it just seems like people get caught up in politics and think that whatever one does is right, whatever the other does is wrong automatically because of who they are without looking into the details of it. We'll take a break, come back, talk about five areas where veterans are being hurt specifically with these cuts. Jamie Rowan is our guest, Associate Professor of Legal Studies at UMass Amherst, Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Societies. I'm passionate about this because for the 20 years now I've been saying veterans, the treatment that veterans get in this country is shameful. Finally, we take steps toward it. So what are we going to do? Make a political splash, we're going to start cutting back the workers that we hired and screw the veterans in the process. Traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jamie Rowan, Associate Professor of Legal Studies at UMass Amherst, Director of the Center for Justice, Law, and Societies. Professor, before we get to the vets, I got to address this text that says, cut everything everywhere, blow it all up, start over clean, cut everything except Social Security and Medicare, which we pay into and get less back than we put in, and take a sledgehammer and chainsaw to cut the waste out of that. Okay, I get you watching the videos on YouTube and everything and all that stuff. First of all, you're wrong because the vast majority of Americans get far more from Social Security than they pay in. If you want to go back and say, well, if you had a chance to invest your money in different things, then maybe you wouldn't have to do that. Okay, make an argument there. But don't say that you pay more in the Social Security than you get out, because that's not true. Secondly, that to me, Professor, would be analogous when it comes to policy to, okay, we got a leaky pipe. You know what we're going to do? We're going to tear the house down and start all over. Well, where are you going to sleep tonight? And how long is it going to take you to find a roof over your head? Explain when it comes to policy, please, how you have to be selective in what you do, and you can maybe tailor it to this veteran situation that we're talking about.
Sure. I think the way to look at it is it's not a free market. It's not like there's competing governments and the best one is going to enter the space and do the services. The fact is we have a government. It does services. when we slash and burn all of those services that we don't even realize we're getting, there will not be anyone entering to fill that space. That is the nature of the private sector versus the public sector. They're different. And so the model here, when it comes to veterans healthcare, for example, would be, all right, let's just assume that we don't need a federally funded public healthcare system for the people who served this country. They can just go into the community. The fact is they can't. The Veterans Affairs have actually tried this. They've tried to funnel some money into the private sector for veterans who had long wait times at the VA and discovered the quality of care was less, the wait times were longer, and in fact, the services that they were getting at the VA were far superior. And so it doesn't have the same analogy of slash and burn and something better is going to take its place.
Let's talk about specifically veterans, how they've been hurt with these cuts.
Yeah, so one of the most important things for people to realize is that the federal government has done a wonderful job of prioritizing hiring veterans. There is law. In 1944, Congress passed a law that veterans should be given preference in federal hiring. That means veterans make up 6.1% of the American population and 30% of the federal workforce. These cuts are not being targeted at people based on their performance or their skills. It's just slash for numbers. That means veterans are more harmed than non-veterans because there are more veterans in the federal workforce. The second thing to realize is these cuts to the VA directly harm VA healthcare, veterans healthcare. They have quality healthcare through the VA, and 90% of the VA's budget and staffing goes to healthcare. And so cutting the VA means cutting healthcare. One of the more tragic pieces of this cuts, though, is the suicide hotline. People who care, for example, about mass shootings and know and believe that people have rights to guns, but it's a mental health crisis that contributes to mass shootings, would probably appreciate the very low cost of a suicide hotline or a crisis hotline for people feeling like they're in crisis. That crisis hotline fields over 2,500 calls a day, and that is now getting slashed. And so people are not going to have people to call if they're in a moment of crisis. The other thing that's really important is veterans suffer from higher rates of substance use, mental health, more criminal legal involvement with more punitive outcomes. They end up incarcerated for longer. And the information we have about veterans and how to help them is gathered through the VA and the most extensive research body that we have in this country. So studies on veterans have shown really important links to between smoking and cancer and how to solve prostate cancer and treat it. And all of that is going to get cut. And so this really important information that we use to help veterans, but also the wider public, is going to go.
Professor, real quick, we only have 30 seconds left. Once you break it, how long does it take to fix it? Because you're talking about veterans who go without services, veterans who may take their own lives, veterans who may go on shooting sprees, et cetera. Once you break it, how long does it take to fix it?
Well, there's two things to think through. One is how do you rebuild the services? That's a concrete solution that Congress could just fund and we might be able to get it back. But what do you do with the lost trust? And that is what is really difficult right now. There's a mental health crisis brewing as people who gave their lives for this country feel like the country has abandoned them. I'm not sure how you regain that trust and how long that takes.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 6:45, quarter till 7. Nice day today. Big old moon out there. And then I got some kind of blood moon or something tonight. I don't know what Dave Cohen's talking about. You can see it if it's clear. Tomorrow, highs of 80. So more warm weather, dry, cloudy tomorrow. Then a chance for showers on Saturday. It's going to screw up the St. Patrick's activities. Some have been postponed till Sunday. The Irish Channel St. Patrick's Day Parade has been, I guess, delayed. I don't know what they're going to do with it. They're not going to be able to do it on Sunday because that's Super Sunday with the Mardi Gras Indians, and that's for St. Joseph's Day, and that's a tradition that happens every year. So I guess they'll have to see if they can come up with an alternate day for that. But then after, Sunday is perfect. Highs of 70. St. Patrick's Day itself on Monday, highs of 72. Plenty of sunshine. So get out and wear some green. Mike Strain joins us now. Dr. Mike Strain, the Commissioner for Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Dr. Strain?
Man, I am doing great. How you like this weather?
Man, I'm loving it.
I'm telling you, it's nice. You know, the ground's drying up. I'm trying to get my garden in the ground. You know, it's got to get a little bit drier so we can get the tractors out there and get it tilled up, get it rowed up, and get it started. I can't wait for fresh Creole tomatoes.
And I got four-month-old Teddy Tucker here. You got Hootie over there. I got Teddy Tucker.
Goodness. How is Teddy?
Teddy is doing great, Mike. He's housebroken like you wouldn't believe, and I can leave the door open with the weather as nice as it is. He comes and goes like he pleases. And this dog, it amazes me. And I want to ask you, this is a veterinarian. I don't know how this happens, but I walk the dog, and he knows when he's had enough because he'll jump up on me, and then it's time to turn around because if I go past that, I got to carry him back. How do these dogs know that? How is that?
Look, they're very smart. That dog's got you in training right now.
He does. Right? He really does.
Oh, he does. Absolutely. They are so smart. Dogs and cats, to a certain degree, can get that smart. So I have a cat that will go scratch the door, not for you to let the cat out. So you will go into the kitchen and get him a treat. They figure it out. You scratch the door, you get out of bed and wake up. And so what? You're not going outside? Then run to the kitchen. You know, and so they learn pretty quickly, you know, what the routine is. But you become, you know, I'm sure with Teddy, you are the focus of Teddy's existence.
Yeah, well, just
Teddy is continuously, you know, working you to make you both of your lives much better.
Just so you know, Teddy's no high-class basset hound or anything like that. He's like I am. He's Tractor Supply mutt trash. You know what I'm saying? So both of us get along well.
Well, as we say, you have an abundance of well-diversified genetics there with Teddy.
Same with me. We're both mutts.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, mutts are good.
Yeah.
I've had quite a few mutts. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, yeah, you got the best of, like, you know, you got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, so it works out well. Let's talk about seafood, Mike, Louisiana crabs and Lenten. I was at a restaurant the other day, and I saw somebody order. You and I have spoken about the big, giant blue crabs. Man, this thing looked like snow crabs that he was eating. They were that big.
I tell you, you know, if you, you know, go down to Bobby Lovell there in St. Bernard Parish, White Boot Warriors, you can order online. He's got some of the biggest crabs I've ever seen. Mm. And they are really nice. The weather conditions have been just right. And I've never seen crabs that fat. My grandfather was a commercial fisherman after he retired from state police. And, you know, we had crabs, but these crabs here are just tremendous, you know, and they're coming from different areas. And they are really, really, really nice. You know, and if you haven't had crabs in a while, because we used to eat crabs all the time. But you need to get some. And look, what is gumbo? What is seafood gumbo if you don't have crabs in it?
Mike, somebody texted in. This is a good question because I lived here all my life. I love it when it comes, I guess it's primarily the female crabs, whether it's yellow or it's orange. Am I eating fat? Am I eating eggs? What is that? Because it's delicious.
Well, on the inside the shell, right? Well, yeah, that is fat. And especially if you reach your fingers up into the horns and feel that.
Yellow or orange?
It's kind of orange. It really is really orange. Now, in the old days, people would eat the eggs on the bottom of the females. Now, you shouldn't do that. I mean, you don't eat those eggs, but that was something that was common. I've seen large numbers of crabs with that, you know, down in Grand Isle.
You talking about on the outside, Mike?
Put those back, yeah, on the outside,
oh,
right?
I've never done that.
Yeah, yep. That's old. People used to do that, but now you need to put those crabs back. Right,
so they can go ahead and repopulate it. They got that kind of thick orange stuff, and then they got the kind of looser mustardish looking stuff. All of that is fat.
Well, the orange stuff is a fat. The looser mustard stuff is probably at some point you've got, you know, just like crawfish. The crawfish fat is actually sort of like their pseudo liver, I would think.
Okay.
It's different. It's a different tissue. But that hard fat up there, and look, that's delicious. Well, it's all good. But remember, all you do, you take your thumb, right, and you clean the lung tissue off, right? You clean that off. You know, you can see little fingers, and then everything else is edible. You know, and that yellow, you know, that yellow material, you know, that's just more part of the crab. It's probably more like hepatocellular. We call that fat, but it's really not like the hard fat that's up in the shell. But it's very good, and it gives it a lot of flavor, just like crawfish. It's, you know, it is that hepatocellular tissue, which is fatty tissue, gives it that distinct flavor. And so, you know, when you look like with crawfish, if you get peeled crawfish and it's just crawfish and you don't have, you know, that orangish material, that hepatocellular, quote, fat in there, well, it's not near as flavorful. And the same way with the crabs. So that's all good. Don't throw any of that away. Don't throw the fat away. Don't throw, you know, that yellow orangish material that's closer in, you know, to the meat of the crabs.
Let's talk about tariffs if we can, Mike, because it's in the news a lot. And when it comes to shrimp and what we've talked about, boy, it really isn't a way. The whole tariff discussion in microcosm, is it not?
Well, it is. And so, but there's several things going on with the tariffs. One, overall in the United States, our imbalance of trade is $1 trillion this year, which means we will buy $1 trillion more in goods than we export. That is very, very bad. That is one of the things that drives inflation, and it really hurts our currency. You know, if you look at the primary purpose of tariffs is one, originally in the United States, that's how the government was funded, with tariffs, period. And we didn't have income taxes, really, until probably the 1930s around, or 1940s. Second is to balance the value of goods and services, specifically goods, in foreign countries with shrimp and with other commodities, and specifically rice. The governments will subsidize the production of those things, and then they will dump it on the market below cost. And a tariff is to level the playing field. You know, here in the United States, we play by a lot of rules. We're very, you know, we have environmental rules, we have labor rules, we have all these different things. And so the cost of production is based on those input costs. In other countries, they don't have that. Not only that, they will, quote, backdoor supplement the production of products, and then they will sell them on the markets. And what happens is that if you look at our shrimp industry, you know, it costs more to produce the local shrimp. You would think that you could go down to the docks and buy shrimp off the boat, you know, cheaper than you could import them, but that's not the case, because in many cases, the imports are artificially below what it would cost to produce them. And so the tariffs, if they put tariffs on shrimp, it is to balance that out.
I got a text about produce and quality, and imported produce is also a quality concern, is it not, Mike, with imported goods?
There's absolutely a quality concern. And when you're talking about produce, you know, the biggest seller of produce into the United States is Mexico. Second biggest seller in the United States is California. And then you have your local produce. And so when you start looking at that, you know, we really have to be careful on produce, especially, you know, when you start looking at what comes in from Mexico. If you think about, you know, the different outbreaks we've had, you know, E. coli and salmonella, a lot of that was from produce from Mexico. So it's got to be inspected. But a lot of produce comes in from Mexico, and that's a labor issue. Now, Mexico is starting to get labor issues because they're having to use foreign workers, H2A and H2B type, coming from South America and Guatemala, as their workers want to come here and work. But you really have to keep a very close eye on the quality. And that's why we do a lot of testing. The USDA does a lot of testing, you know, and the CDC keeps track of it. And that's why we track these products. So if there is an issue, then we can deal with it quickly.
Thank you, Mike Strain. Appreciate your time as always. Y'all, look, go to, tell me where they can find the crawfish tails, Mike.
Oh, you can go to our website, ldaf.la.gov. There's a great one there. Just came out on White Boot Warriors, and it's Bobby Lavelle, and you're going to really like that one, and it's about crabs. And so if we want a strong seafood industry, we have to consume certified Louisiana seafood, fresh, local, certified. Time for some crabs, shrimps, crawfish, and don't forget about them oysters.
You got that right. Thank you, Mike. 6:55, 5 till 7, traffic now, WWL. In case you have not heard, the St. Patrick's Day Parade on Saturday has been, I would use the word suspended, because I don't know that it's been canceled or postponed, because I don't know when they're going to have it, but they're negotiating, or at least talking with NOPD to see when that can happen. That's the Irish Channel St. Patrick's Day Parade, because the risk of severe weather has increased for Saturday afternoon. Today and tomorrow will be very nice. Highs of 81 today, 80 tomorrow, then in severe weather on Saturday. Sunday, beautiful. Highs of 70, plenty of sunshine. St. Patrick's Day itself, beautiful. Highs of 72 and plenty of sunshine. Let's talk about Medicaid and waste and fraud and abuse. Chris McGee joins us now, data analytics manager with the Louisiana Legislative Auditor's Office. How you doing, Chris?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm okay. I bet you're pretty good at math.
I do like numbers.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think this would be that. Let's talk about this Medicaid report that you worked on and what it found, because nobody wants waste in government. Nobody wants fraud in Medicaid. Nobody wants abuse in Medicaid. We do want people that can't provide for themselves or can't get medical care or can't afford it to get it. If they don't get it, then ultimately they go to the emergency room and we all end up paying for it one way or the other. I don't mean to make this more than it seems to be, but tell me about the report and what led to it and what you found.
Yeah, so we actually started this project because we were conducting another project and really stumbled upon how big this program was and really how LDH had not really overseen how the program was spending its funds and how these funds were actually ultimately leading to better outcomes for Medicaid beneficiaries. So we actually started a project that we didn't plan to start based on some of the risks that we saw.
So let me take a step back, if I can, Chris, just for a minute, so we all understand, because some of us that don't have anything to do with Medicaid don't quite understand who gets it. When you talk about money, and you're talking about a bucket of money here for Medicaid, a different bucket of money, specific buckets of money within Medicaid, and then where does LDH, Louisiana Department of Hospitals, come in and their role in overseeing all of this? I'm just trying to get an overall view, first of all.
Yeah, so what LDH has done and what the state of Louisiana has done over the last 10-plus years is attempt to increase the quality of care delivered in the state. The first step in this was moving to managed care, which has private insurance companies manage the care of Medicaid beneficiaries. In 2018, 2019 or so, the state decided that it could use this additional bucket of money, this $2.4 billion that we analyzed in our audit, to further increase the mission of increasing outcomes for Medicaid beneficiaries.
Let me jump in for a second. Where'd that $2.4 billion come from? Federal government?
Yeah, so approximately $1.9 billion were federal government funds, and the remainder were not actually state general funds. They were what are known as intergovernmental transfers, mm-hmm. which were provided by three hospitals in the state.
So that was private money or not?
These are technically public entities. It's LSU Health Sciences Center in New Orleans, the old Leonard J. Schaubert, which is now known as SRMC, and then Hospital Service District Number 1 in Terrebonne.
Okay, and again, I'm not trying to get too far in the weeds, but as I always say, if you play golf for money, you know that's where most of the cheating goes on. Not that I'm saying there's any cheating here. I'm just saying that's why sometimes things get complex and there are no simple solutions to complex problems. Please proceed, Chris.
Yeah, so what we really found as we started looking into this program is that while on the surface the intentions are good in terms of improving outcomes for Medicaid beneficiaries, what we really found is that a lot of these dollars are not making it down to the hospitals who are providing the care to the Medicaid beneficiaries. A lot of dollars are being used to pay back those hospitals that put up the money in the first place, and also for other administrative and other expenses that don't directly affect the care of Louisiana citizens.
Okay, I'm confused. The hospitals put up the money in the first place. Where'd they get that money?
So they get it from the money they have in their bank accounts.
Public-private money?
Yeah, really they had to have some money available to put it up in the first place. And through basically a method of they put up the money once it's determined that they have met certain conditions, and then federal money and their own money that they put up in the first place goes back to them. And so then that money is continuously used to fund the IGT portion of this program.
IGT being?
Intergovernmental transfer.
Gotcha. Okay, so is there anything amiss with them, the money being paid back to them? That's what got my attention.
The GAO and the federal government have not said that that is improper. What we found, though, is the way that that's being done for one of the quality networks really is going back to refund that money they put up in the first place. But what we found for the other network is that in addition to those funds going back to those hospitals, additional money is going back to those hospitals, which reduces the money that's available for the rest of the hospitals in the network who are doing the work on the ground to improve quality of care.
Okay, let's let our eyes deglaze for a moment. And again, Chris, this is not a reflection on you. This is just complicated stuff, and people think, you know, it's simple. Just go in with a chainsaw and cut this, cut that. And that's not to say that there isn't waste and abuse and fraud, but it gets very complex when you get into the details of this, and that's what we're trying to sort through. Chris McGee, Data Analytics Manager with Louisiana Legislative Auditor's Office. The Louisiana Health Department failed to oversee parts of the state Medicaid program. I wanted to get some context on this. We'll try to get to actually what happens from here when we return. 722 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Chris McGee, Data Analytics Manager with Louisiana Legislative Auditor's Office, about a new report, Louisiana Department of Health failing to properly oversee about $2.4 billion in Medicaid spending. Chris, it's complicated stuff. We got 3 minutes left. If you can, please try to summarize and give me who was doing what should have been done, and who did it affect, and what can be done to fix it from here, or what needs to be done.
Yeah, so ultimately, this is a Medicaid program, and it's LDH's responsibility. And so we found that the funds in this program were not being used for their intended purpose. The intended purpose was to improve access to care, improve quality, and enhance health. And LDH was not properly overseeing the MCOs and all the entities involved to ensure this program did that. So what is good to report out, though, is as soon as we started making the Department of Health aware of these issues, they did start redesigning the program to address the issues that we found and pointed out. And I do think, based on the changes that they are currently working on, that this program really should focus more in the future on ensuring that the milestones in the program, what the program's trying to achieve, truly do have a measurable impact on Medicaid beneficiaries, ensuring that additional dollars, or the majority of the dollars, truly make it out to all the hospitals across the state who participate in this program, so they can provide better quality services to the individuals that they see.
Let me ask it this way. Who got the money, and what were the results of those not getting the money or the help that should have?
Yeah, the biggest takeaway from the money perspective is that a lot of the dollars weren't making it down to the hospitals. So a lot of the dollars were going back to pay back those hospitals who put up the funds in the first place. And then a lot of dollars in one of the networks was being kept for administrative purposes and management costs, for paying back other hospitals for incurring certain expenses, really just not following the actual outcomes themselves. And so I think by redesigning the program and ensuring that dollars truly follow increased outcomes, the program will serve the residents of Louisiana in a better way.
Not even a minute left, 20 seconds. Criminal activity, asleep at the switch, mismanagement, how would you characterize this?
I think a lack of oversight. I think if the program is overseen at a better level from LDH and the MCOs, that these dollars will be spent in the proper manner.
And the reimbursement that happened that perhaps should not have happened, that's just playing according to the rules, and the rules were going back to golf, where sometimes rules help you, sometimes they hurt you. This was not illegal. It was done according to the rules, but the rules shouldn't have been that way?
Yeah, I think that we didn't find any evidence of any illegal activity. What we found is that redesigning the program and overseeing it better would lead to better results.
Thank you, Chris. Complicated stuff, but we understand it. I think Chris McGee, Data Analytics Manager with Louisiana Legislative Auditor's Office. We'll take a break, come back, talk about UNO moving into the LSU system. Minute late, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave. 46, 14 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Nice weather till Saturday. Then it turns beautiful, but maybe some rough weather on Saturday. We'll keep you apprised of everything you need to know here on WWL. I am a graduate of UNO, as is Newell Norman, Diane Newman, the boss lady around here, a lot of other people. And UNO has done a lot. Clancy Dubose, I think, is the first guy to say that UNO built the middle class in New Orleans. They are struggling, though, and now there's some talk of moving it from, well, let's find out what they're going to move it from. As we talked to Piper Hutchison, who is a reporter for Louisiana Illuminator. Good morning, Piper. How are you?
Doing great, Tommy. How are you?
Piper Hutchison. I didn't mean to mispronounce your name. I graduated from UNO, Piper, but I don't quite understand what the difference is between the LSU system and where UNO is now. So let's start there if we can. They're in the UL system now?
The University of Louisiana system, yes. The state has four different higher education systems, LSU, the UL system, the Southern system, and the community college system. And now there's talk of moving UNO from the UL system back to the LSU system, where it was for the majority of its history.
When did it change? When did it become UL? Do you know?
It was moved into the UL system in 2011.
Okay, so when I graduated, it was definitely part of the LSU system. Do you know what the reason was for moving it to the UL system?
You know, in 2011, there were a lot of budget problems for higher education, and there was some feelings that UNO was kind of overshadowed in the LSU system, with LSU being the flagship university and a major research institution. Now, UNO is also a research institution, but it's a tier lower than LSU. And there was some feeling that it made more sense for UNO to be in the UL system with other R2 institutions and regional universities.
Made sense to whom, Piper?
You know, the legislators who were debating this, you know, some boosters as well, felt that it made more sense to move UNO to the UL system. You know, what's interesting is that this move in 2011 came after a bill failed that would have merged UNO with Southern New Orleans. Mm-hmm.
So what was the result? I'm trying to figure out what was the advantage here, because I know I'm reading your story here at the Illuminator that at the time UNO alumni boosters applauded the plan because they thought it was overshadowed by the LSU system. But I don't know what that actually means, overshadowed. As long as, and again, let's talk about the importance of being a research institution, because it would seem to me if LSU as the parent would be able to provide UNO with the resources that they need, that's the primary function, right? Or am I missing something here?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't around in 2011. You know, I started reporting in 2021, so I couldn't give you all of the details about what the arguments were. But, you know, reading the old stories about this, it kind of, to me, reminds me of how LSU Shreveport supporters kind of feel that that university is overshadowed by the main campus. There's always going to be like a little feeling of tension between some of the smaller universities and the main campus, the flagship university that's going to get, you know, more money, more attention, more research dollars.
Well, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings here. And again, I am an LSU graduate, but a UNO graduate, rather, but for whatever reason, branding, LSU is always going to be known as Baton Rouge. Isn't that pretty much the case? I don't know if you're a reporter. I don't know if you want to make that determination or not, but I'll say that. It would seem as though LSU, when you say LSU, people automatically think Tiger Stadium, Baton Rouge, Tigers, etc. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Piper Hutchison.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
supporter for Louisiana Illuminator. If UNO does get moved back into the LSU system, what would that mean? Would it be good or bad for the university funding, etc.? 751, 9 till 9. And what do the legislators think about it? Traffic now, WWL. 756 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Piper Hutchinson, a talented reporter with Louisiana Illuminator. She wrote a story about a letter that House Speaker Philip DeVilliers and Senate President Cameron Henry jointly signed to the Regents Chairwoman Misty Cordell about UNO. We reached out to both of those legislators, and we're not able to come on. Hopefully we'll have one of them on next week. I think Newell the other day spoke to DeVilliers. Meanwhile, Piper Hutchinson, what are the legislators asking the Regents to do?
They're asking Regents to study the possibility of moving UNO from the LSU system to the UL system, which is something that is required by state law to happen before any kind of movement takes place.
So did they explain why they wanted this to happen?
The letter doesn't go into that detail. I did speak to Speaker DeVilliers about it, and he told me, you know, they're not dead set on this happening. They just want to look into the possibility. But he also gave me the impression that this is something that had come from Senator Henry, and I have not yet had a chance to talk to him about his thoughts on this. I've reached out but haven't yet heard back.
So do you know if the end game here is to keep UNO viable and that it would be, I guess, beneficial to UNO were it to go back into the LSU system?
Yes, I think that's something they want to try to figure out, if this move would be better for UNO while it's struggling.
And what happens from here?
So the Board of Regents has a year to conduct this study and make a report to the legislature. From the letter, it sounds like they want results before then, but even if they do get those results, there won't be any sort of legislation to do this until next year.
Any final thoughts, Piper? Anything we're missing before we let you go?
You know, I think this is just going to be something interesting to watch. You know, for me, it was notable that the UL system president had not been consulted before this letter was sent. So I think it'll be interesting. Maybe the question is whether this is something coming from the LSU system. That's not something I've been able to determine, as my LSU sources have not responded to my questions about this.
What did UNO say about it?
I spoke to UL system president Rick Gallo, who said, you know, they hadn't been talked to about this, but that they would, of course, provide any information necessary. And, you know, they trust legislative leadership to do whatever is right for the university.
So UNO deferred to UL, correct?
I try to go to the man at the top whenever I can.
I hear you. That makes sense. Thank you, Piper. Appreciate your time and your work. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll take a break, come back, talk about Medicare Advantage enrollment periods. Back in a flash, WWL. Well, the weather's going to be nice today and nice tomorrow, but then it's going to be ugly on Saturday, which means the St. Patrick's Day festivities have been either moved to Sunday or, in the case of the Irish Channel St. Patrick's Day Parade, put on hold. They're going to try to find a date to do it. I don't think it can be Sunday because the Super Sunday Mardi Gras Indian thing happens for St. Joseph's Day on that Sunday, so hopefully they'll be able to come up with a date, a 4 out of 5 risk for enhanced weather. And then the next 2 days, Sunday and Monday, St. Patrick's Day, look absolutely beautiful, better than today and tomorrow going to be. It's the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period. And if you get your health coverage through a Medicare Advantage plan, you need to keep listening so you can learn about an important deadline that happens later this month. Calvin Mallett joins us now on behalf of People's Health to help walk us through the process. Good morning, Calvin. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right, sir. Tell me why this is an important time for people with a Medicare Advantage plan.
Well, if you have Medicare, you can only make changes to your health care coverage at certain times of the year. These are called enrollment periods, and there are a few different kinds. We're currently in the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period, which runs from each year from January 1st to March 31st. During this time, Medicare Advantage plans members can make a one-time change to their health care coverage.
What kind of changes can they make?
Well, you can switch to a new Medicare Advantage plan that better meets your needs. It could be from your same insurance company or a different one. Or you can drop your Medicare Advantage plan and return to original Medicare altogether.
Can you switch from original Medicare to Medicare Advantage?
No. The open enrollment period is only for Medicare Advantage plan members. So if you want to switch from original Medicare, you may have to wait for the annual enrollment period in October. Mm-hmm. However, you may be able to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan sooner if you meet certain criteria. For example, if you lose coverage through your employer, if you move outside of your plan service area, or if you have certain chronic health conditions like diabetes or heart disease.
Okay, so if you change to a new health plan for 2025, can you change again now?
Yes. If you change plans during late 2024 and your new coverage started January 1st, 2025, you're likely eligible for this enrollment period, unless you've already changed your plan since January 1st. This time frame is ideal for people who joined a new Medicare Advantage plan for 2025 and aren't happy with it. It's another chance to pick the coverage option that works best for you.
So if you joined a new Medicare Advantage plan for 2025 and you're not happy, this is the chance to pick the coverage option that's right for you, right?
Yes. Make a point to use your plan benefits early in the year, especially if you choose a new plan for 2025. Get your annual eye exam or see your primary care provider for an annual wellness visit. Then take the time to reflect on experience. Were you comfortable with the plan's cost? Could you easily get needed medical services and prescription drugs? If you needed assistance, was the plan's customer service helpful? If the answer to those questions is no, you may want to explore other coverage options.
Can you give us some pointers, share some advice for choosing a new Medicare Advantage plan?
Sure. Let's say you're trying to pick between two Medicare Advantage plans. Be sure to check the costs, review each plan's premiums, deductibles, copays, and coinsurance amounts, then ask which plan best fits my budget. Mm-hmm. Consider the coverage, make a list of health care services you can get most often, and make sure they're covered. And then also ask about the extra benefits. Does the plan cover routine services such as dental, vision, and hearing? What about Part D, prescription drug coverage? These benefits bring additional value to a health plan, but only if you use them.
What about considering the plan type?
Definitely. You may be eligible for multiple plan types, so it's important to think through your options. Some Medicare Advantage plans only cover care from network providers with limited exceptions. Other plans let you see out-of-network providers for most covered services, though you generally have lower costs when you stay in-network. There are other types of plan also, including some with special eligibility criteria.
What type of special criteria?
Well, people who have both Medicare and Medicaid may be eligible for a dual-eligible special needs plan. These typically have lower costs for medical services and prescription drugs than other types of plans. For example, members in a People's Health dual eligible plan, needs plan pay zero for all covered prescription drugs.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. We're talking to Calvin Mallett on behalf of People's Health. It's a Medicare Advantage open enrollment period. If you get your health coverage through a Medicare Advantage plan, keep listening and learn about an important deadline later on this month. And when we come back, we'll talk about other plans with special enrollment requirements. 8:20, time for traffic now, WWL. 8:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Beautiful Thursday morning, and we are talking with Calvin Millett on behalf of People's Health. Medicare Advantage open enrollment period is here, and if you get your health coverage through a Medicare Advantage plan, he's given us some details on an important deadline later this month. So are there other plans with special enrollment requirements, Calvin?
Yes. Some Medicare Advantage organizations offer chronic condition special needs plans. And those are designed to support people with long-lasting health conditions like diabetes and heart disease. To enroll, a health care provider must confirm you have an eligible condition.
And how do these plans support members?
Well, it depends. Some plans have lower copays for specialist visits or certain prescription drugs. Others may provide care coordination services, which help members stay healthy and follow a treatment plan. Each chronic condition special needs plan has different costs, benefits, and support services. So if you consider enrolling into one, be sure to ask what it offers and verify that you are eligible for that plan.
All right, any final advice? I know we got a deadline coming up on us, right?
All right, so don't let the March 31st deadline sneak up on you. It may be your last chance to switch Medicare Advantage plans until October of later this year. Review your coverage options now so you have the time to carefully consider your options and make sure the best decisions can make the best decisions for you.
Finally, if people want to find out more about People's Health, Calvin, how do they do it?
They can visit our website, www.peopleshealth.com, or they can give us a call at 1-800-978-9765.
And I guess we'll also wander into the People's Health Medicare Center, right? 3017 Vets, next to Party City in Metairie?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Appointments.
8 to 4.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
Oh, no. No appointment needed, Monday through Friday, 8 to 4.
And you can make an appointment. You can make an appointment if you want. Deadline's coming up March 31st. Go to peopleshealth.com to find out more. Call 1-800-978-9765. Thank you, Calvin Millett. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Leslie Harris, New Orleans City Council member, about the Homeless Transition Center the state opened in January. And we talked 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Got some bad weather coming in Saturday. Stay aware of that. The Irish Channel St. Patrick's Day Parade has been canceled. They'll try to find another date for that, as I understand it. Traditionally, this Sunday is the time for the Mardi Gras Indians and the St. Joseph's Day celebration. I think they call it Super Sunday, so I don't know that NOPD would be able to handle that. But hopefully they'll find a time for the downed Irish Channel St. Patrick's Day Parade. And the other festivities in the area have been moved until Sunday. And again, 4 out of 5 chance for severe weather, so be aware of that. Between now and then, nice weather. And then after that, really nice on Sunday and St. Patrick's Day. Leslie Harris joins us now, New Orleans City Council member, to talk about the homeless situation. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm great, Tommy. How are you?
Well, I'm forced to work from home today because of some technical stuff going on at work. And I had my furry little friend sitting on my lap for the last 20 minutes because... and I feel for you and what you go through. And I got to tell you, I'm beginning to think that that this dog is not doing the chores I leave for him during the day, that he might be sleeping.
I think that's probably right.
I think
that's right.
But at least he's not chewing the couch cushions yet. How are yours?
One pulled a scrim the other day, so we can get into that. That actually went through a window, which is very scary for me. The dog's fine, but it was, it was shocking.
Well, I think you need to sit the dog down. And look, you're a very accomplished lady, a skilled corporate attorney. I don't have to lecture you. But as a parent, I think you might want to sit the dog down and explain to him you don't do everything you see on TV, right? I mean, you don't just
right.
If Scrim does it, you don't do it. It's not right.
It's not right. It's not right at all.
If Scrim jumps out of a window, are you going to jump out of a window? Apparently. But that's not the point. Let's talk about I love to make you laugh. Let's talk about the governor's homeless situation. I don't understand, and I was talking to Jacques Thibodeau about this, and he didn't dispute the money, the amount I gave him, so I presume it's accurate. I did the math, and it seems like $105,000 per homeless person for a couple of months to find temporary housing. Am I missing something here? You're smart. You're a skilled attorney. Tell me, am I on target here or not?
You are exactly on target, and that's why I wish, and looking back, and looking forward, I hope, that we can get with the state to resolve these issues and work together collaboratively. You're right. So it is around $100,000 for 3 months of temporarily sheltering people. And that means...
Well, it's $100,000 per person, just to be clear.
Correct.
So people don't,
Correct, per person. Whereas the proposal that we presented was around $21,000 per person to shelter them in home, get them apartments for a year. So you can do the math on whether or not this was a value added or not. I don't think it was. We will continue to present the proposal to the state to ask for about $8.5 million to house 344 people. That's per year. I think that looking back, we could have used that money in other ways that could have helped a lot more people, strengthened our shelter system, and gotten folks wraparound services that they need so that they can stay in their homes, get the help that they need. I'm willing to work with the state going forward. I've always been open to work with the state. Our proposal was presented to them, and we were told that it was not seriously considered.
The state is quick to poke its nose in the business of the city of New Orleans, and I'm not defending the city here at all, but, you know, when it comes to $105,000 per person for a couple of months, is anybody going to look into this and ask to see exactly why it kind of Jacques Thibodeau told me that it was because of counseling, this and the other thing, but I presume that your plan included the same kind of stuff for $21,000 per person as opposed to $105,000. That's a lot of money, and I'm just wondering if anybody's looking into this or wondering what cost so much or where the money went?
I would hope so. And when it was first proposed with that price tag, I was shocked by it because this is not just money that's coming out of the sky. This is taxpayer money. And taxpayer money from across the state to house people in a temporary shelter for 3 months. I would hope that our legislative body inquires into how that money was spent and what it was spent on. And while Jacques said that there were services provided, we know that services were not provided until long after people had been there. So there weren't counseling services right away. There weren't healthcare services right away. So you really have to dig into what that price tag actually provided. But you're absolutely right. The proposal that we provided to the state included not only sheltering people, meaning getting them apartments, but getting them the services, the wraparound services that they needed for $21,844 per person.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Leslie Harris about the homeless situation. I did see a story yesterday, and I flip around a lot, so I'm not quite sure where I saw it, about business people complaining about homelessness, and I think it was Treme, and how maybe they're homeless people are coming back. I don't know if they're leaving the center in Gentilly or more showing up. We'll talk about it. Leslie Harris is, and look, I like Leslie and I respect her because she's a very talented, skilled attorney. Didn't have to go into public service, but she did, and I think she's one of these people that want to do the right thing and want to help other people, and it's why she did it, because she doesn't need to. She chose to. 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:57, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Leslie Harris, talking about the homeless situation. Somebody texted in, as a Republican, I would have liked for the city of New Orleans to have solved the issue without state help. It didn't happen, and Governor apparently thought it was important to remove the eyesore of the homeless encampments before the Super Bowl. It is amazing how Democrats don't solve a crisis for years and then second-guess Republicans when they try. See, I think that this goes to how people immediately vote red or blue or get in line with this party or the other one. The point is, Leslie Harris had a plan that would have cost $21,000 per person and was working. The governor used his plan that cost $105,000 per person. And because you either get in the Republican or the Democratic line, you just ignore that price differential. And where did the money go? And it's your money. I'll say that, and then I'll get back to Leslie Harris. What happens from here, Leslie?
We will continue to work with our nonprofit partners to house and do outreach to the people who are back on the street. We know that the state plans to close the shelter at the end of this month, and as we predicted, we know that many of those people will end up back in the CBD and the other areas where they were previously. The city will continue its plan. And Tommy, to the point of the city's plan, since February 2024, the city and its nonprofit partners have housed 822 individuals. That's since February 2024. And we were on track to continue to house people before the governor opened this temporary shelter and cleared those encampments. I get that people think it was an eyesore, but you have to put a human face on the issue of homelessness. And I would implore people to volunteer, to walk and talk and come sit with me, and to really hear the stories of the people who are on the street. It's not what you think they are.
And as a guy who
and
just...
To that,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, to that point, on March 26th, we're going to have a quality of life meeting to talk about our sustainability plan. So Clutch Consulting will be there, Dr. Vegno, the Office of Homelessness Strategies and Services. So that's on March 26th at, I believe, 10 a.m. if people want to tune in or come by, that'd be great. And hopefully we'll have some stories of people who have been sheltered and who continue to be housed through the city's Home for Good plan.
Thank you, Leslie. Appreciate your time. Leslie Harris, New Orleans City Council member. And getting back to this text, when you get yourself with a competition, I'm just a guy calling a game here, right? Okay, so when you get between Republican and Democrat, what gets lost in that is, well, wait a minute. How did $105,000 per person for 2 months? Where'd that money go? But you don't care about that. It's your money, but they get you so tangled up with win, lose, Republican, Democrat, your money gets spent and nobody cares to where it goes. We'll be back, WWL. This is Fox can be. Matter of fact, he's second generation Fox, but he asked the White House press secretary yesterday, are you sure nobody here at the White House shorted the Dow? And if you don't understand what it means to short stock, basically you buy in advance knowing, betting on the price going down of the stock, and then you buy it back. And the White House press secretary said, no, I don't think so. But with what's going on in the market and the moves with the reaction and knowing what was going to happen, I had a thought before. And kudos to Peter Ducey for having what's to stand up and say that in the White House briefing room, especially working for Fox. Because, again, going back to the conversation I had earlier about $105,000 to shelter to provide shelter for per person for a couple of months of homeless people with the governor's facility on Gentilly Road, you would think you could have put them up at the Four Seasons for that. But nobody cares, or some people don't care, because the governor did it as opposed to the city. The city could have done it for $21,000. Leslie Harris had been doing it for $21,000. But all that gets lost in winning and losing with the blue or the red or the Democrat or the Republican. And I guess it's one thing in a football game. I talked about calling a game earlier. It's one thing if, you know, you look the other way on a pass interference penalty and you laugh because, okay, well, we won the game anyway. But when it's your tax money that's being wasted or being fraud or abused or whatever, you can't pick sides and say, well, it's wrong if the red does it, but right if the blue does it, and vice versa. That's not the way it works, right? There's right and there's wrong. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now, and we'll talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Happy St. Patrick's weekend to you, Ian McNulty.
Yes, that's right. 'Tis the season, right? We shift through them, don't we?
And, yes, we do.
Thanks for accommodating me on a different day. It sure does have like Friday vibes if I'm talking with you. But the upside is we got a little extra time today because it's not deadline Friday for me, so we got a little more time with you.
So where have you been eating? Where have you been drinking?
Well, you know, I emerged from carnival season, which was, let me check the calendar here, a week and change ago. Yesterday was a week from Ash Wednesday. Hard to believe. But this is the truth. 10 days ago with Toast Sunday, I emerged from that season, you know, feeling a little wrung out financially and, shall we say, nutritionally.
What about spiritual,
right?
What about spiritual?
I was buoyed by it spiritually. Right. Mardi Gras was a great recharge for the New Orleans battery, especially this season because of how beautiful it was. But there's no doubt about it. If you take part in carnival, you got to plunk down some cash. You host a party. You go to parties. You're going out a little more. Maybe you're riding or marching a crew. Trying to get around town and Ubers a little bit more under the conditions. It's it can be. It takes more of a toll than your average week or month or whoever span of time you're measuring. And so when I emerged from carnival, I had a hankering, a feeling that people would be looking for some good bargains. And so I rounded up what I consider just great anytime bargain restaurants around the area not because they're running a special and not because it's happy hour at the bar, but because they always have really good prices. And I thought that would be kind of a refreshing change of pace for folks coming back out. Now, of course, you want to save money, just eat at home. But then again, maybe not. Been to the grocery store lately. So sometimes you can really leave it to the pros and get, some of these restaurants that we could talk about, really big portions too. So you're getting at least another meal out of it with leftovers the next day. And honestly, people who live in small households by themselves or just maybe with one other person, sometimes that can be more economical than cooking at home, truly.
Right, especially if you live by yourself. A lot of times it can be more cost-effective, unless you just want to eat, you know, like I do, cook a pot of crap with rice and meat and all that. I mean, but really, I'm serious. If you want anything tasty, it's and you can plan on cooking it yourself, by the time you buy all the ingredients, it's more cost-effective to get it at a restaurant.
Right. Oh, please don't include an egg in this recipe. Please don't include an egg.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll have to short the down myself to afford a dozen. but some of the lead examples of this, and you can there's a whole story on NOLA.com that I think I rounded up about eight or nine of them around the area.
Well, let's talk about some of them. We're always looking for bargains.
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the lead example of this is to me is Lebanon's Cafe. It's on Carrollton Avenue near Tulane and Loyola Universities. It's been there forever. I call it a dive Middle Eastern restaurant. And I say dive with the same affection that I describe dive bars, right? A little down the hills, but reliable, affordable, always there for you. I've been going to Lebanon since I've lived in New Orleans because it's inexpensive. And you know, when I first got here, it was kind of broke guy a couple years out of college, or just now a broke guy coming out of carnival season. And it's, you know, it's the typical menu that you get from the Middle Eastern restaurants with the shawarma and the gyro and the salads and all the dips. And but the prices have remained resiliently low. My go-to order there, it doesn't sound cheap. The lamb chop plate, I think it's, you know, somewhere in the $20 range now at this point, which doesn't sound cheap, but it's a stack of lamb chops that you're sharing around the table with several
people. That's a plateful. That's like a family platter.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you know, someone went through the buffet at Easter Sunday and just loaded up on the high-value protein items. And then you get that, and then you fill the table, like you can see in that photo, if you're following along on NOLA.com or my Instagram, at Ian McNulty NOLA. You can fill the table with these dips. And appetizers, and Tommy, some of them are still under $5. It's crazy. And it's BYOB, and I also recommend in the story, perhaps, BYOG, bring your own glass. Just, you know, heads up, because it, like I say, it's you can see where the savings come from at this place, right? And the time or two I've gone there with a, you know, I'm not bringing something from the cellar to open at the table, but, you know, you bring along your grocery store wine, and you might have to resort to drinking it out of an iced tea cup or something like that. But, you know, if you have, like, one of those little portable beverage cups, you know, your favorite little, you know, something you take along for camping or the parade route or something that you can pour your wine in, maybe a little nicer accommodation. Just meeting the place halfway. But the moral of the story, it's a screaming bargain. It's been there forever. And, you know, it's a nice night out. You can get a few people together without breaking the bank.
Lebanon's Cafe, 1500 North Carrollton. Before we move on, I wanted to ask you about this because for whatever reason, lamb is not popular in New Orleans. I don't know. And you write about food. You study food. You this is your life's work. Yeah. Is it a regional thing with lamb or not? What's going on with that? Because I think I was maybe 30 before I had a lamb chop or even tasted what lamb was, maybe 20 before I even knew what the hell it was.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a regional thing. It's just a supply thing. It's not something that has traditionally been a big part of the menus around here. It's not something that comes out of the Creole tradition, but it is something that comes out of, you know, Middle Eastern traditions for sure. That, you know, you tend to find good examples there. I think it's catching on a little more. It's you know, some of the higher end restaurants have embraced it. You know, coming through across the French tradition. I love it. I mean, good lamb is just fantastic, no matter what you're doing with it. But it's going to be, you know, good quality goes a long way with the lamb, and maybe the knowledge of how to not overcook it. You know, it's very easy to go from lamb chop to lamb shoe leather.
Very popular in Ireland as well, right? I want to ask the audience right now, 504-260-1870. Have you ever had a lamb chop? And what's the difference in between lamb and mutton, or is there a difference?
Age. It's mutton is a very old lamb. Well, it started out as a lamb, didn't it? And then it turned into mutton is the very old sheep.
So it's been around
the block a few times.
Cook them differently. They taste differently or not?
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All that. Yeah. It's the difference between veal and stew meat, right? The veal chop you're serving for high dollar and the roast in the back of the stove that's going to become a po' boy on Sunday at your grandma's house.
So for people that have never tasted it, how would you describe the flavor of lamb?
You're a good lamb. I mean, a little grassy, you know, you, you can taste, hopefully you can taste what they've been eating. A little more mineral rich flavor than beef, richer, just richer, bolder flavor, I would say. And it is even, you know, we've treated right, cooked well, it's going to be a little tougher. It's a little, got a little more bite, a little more chew to it than, you know, let's say your pristine cut of beef. And that's not a bad thing, you know, but all the meat was chewy. Yeah. Well, that when it's flavorful, when you spend a little time chewing it, that's when the flavor sinks in, you know, that's what, you know, if you like your steaks the way I do, a little more robust and fatty, more of a hanger steak than a filet mignon. Mm-hmm. That's because you can get that bit of chew in it, and it activates all the taste buds in your mouth. It's part of the delicious experience of it.
All right, let's talk about Le Ponce.
Yeah, Le Ponce is a great example of a bargain restaurant and the newest one on the list here. It is the breakfast cafe, bakery cafe spinoff from Cafe Degas, the French restaurant on Esplanade Avenue. It's just behind it. A few years ago, and for many years, it was the Fairgrinds coffee shop. The Café Degas people took it over, and it's a cute little French cafe bakery, but great prices. It's a short menu. You can do like a build-your-own breakfast sandwich, either on a really good baguette or a croissant, and no matter what options you throw in there, it's going to be under $10 for like a big sandwich. They have these puffs. They're sort of... the French name is chouchou, but it's these little pastry puffs that fill the cream. You can drizzle with chocolate and pair it up with a coffee. They call it the Dunk Dat Duo, and that's just $6, and it's fun. So if you're going into a restaurant and spending less than $10 for one, possibly two items, that's a great deal. And I love Le Ponce because of the quality, the character, the value, and the location. It's very close to City Park. So if you're starting your morning at City Park with some exercise or just, you know, enjoying some time in nature, that's a good place to stop for breakfast before or coffee after, perhaps.
Let me take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Rocky and Carlos of Thai food in Chalmette. What?
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
With Ian McNulty. When we come back, you got any questions about eating or drinking, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line. Ian McNulty spending Thursday with us today because he's got, I guess, St. Patrick's Day plans on Fridays. Not my business. Either way, we're happy to have him for an hour. You got any questions about eating or drinking? Here's your chance. I have some about Irish food. We'll get in before the hour's over. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:28 now. Were that it Friday morning, but it's not. It's Thursday. Nonetheless, Ian McNulty is here with us, giving us an hour of his time. We appreciate it, talking, eating, and drinking, as he always does. He covers that for NOLA.com, and you can find his story, Broke After Mardi Gras. These local New Orleans restaurants are great for cheap eats, and he's sharing some of them with us here because, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, you were financially, spiritually, physically broke, but not battered.
You're making me think of fish and chips now, which we should
talk
about before the hour.
There you go, exactly. We're going to talk about some Irish food before we wrap it up. But yeah. Tell me about this Rocky and Carlos of Thai food in Chalmette.
You know Rocky and Carlos.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Big portions, great fun. It's in Chalmette. It's down the parish. Well, not too far away, also in Chalmette, is a restaurant called Secret Thai that is, it's not Rocky and Carlos, it's very different, but it shares some of the same spirit of value and portion. This place feeds you. And so that's why it's one of the prime examples on my list of like places you can go anytime and get a really good deal and definitely leftovers. I mean, no matter how you order there, you're going to leave with leftovers. No matter how many people you have, no matter how many times you divide the number of plates, the number of people you've brought, because simply so much food shows up for the cost of the dish that it just blows all calculations. Most of the main entrees are under $20, some significantly under $20, and they're huge, Tommy. And it's not just a matter of quantity, because that wouldn't make my list. It's quality. It's really good food. And Secret Thai is also famous for its use of spice. They can put a serious hurting on you if you venture into the higher reaches of the spice level. Like, I'm 100% serious about this. I'm laughing because it is so intensely spicy, but it is no joke. They have a scale, like a Richter scale, basically, of 1 to 5. And if you don't like spice, consider going well below 1. They will divide it into fractions of levels. But 1 is a good level if you like spicy food. Seriously. Anything
so
higher than that, they're going to warn
five?
You about.
Have you had 5?
No, I've not. I've worked my way up the scale. We've done 2, 2.5, and it was frankly too much for me. Like, it was an experience, but and I'm glad I registered it, but I don't want to repeat it, and I don't want to go higher. So
give me a comparison of what 2.5 is like to something else that we might have had.
Oh, kerosene splashed on your tongue with a Bic lighter right behind it. No, I'm just kidding.
That's hot.
But it's pulsing with heat. It's mm-hmm. to the point, to me, and but people have different levels to this. To me, it overwhelmed the flavor of the food.
So
I could taste was hot.
With that being said, I never did understand from the food standpoint, the culinary standpoint, who would enjoy that? I understand you can make it where it does feel like kerosene with a Bic lighter, but why? Who would want that? Do people actually
they're out there
enjoy that, honestly?
Yes, they're out there. There are pepperheads among us. I think it can be a trained thing. I think you can your body can acclimate to it and actually very much enjoy it. I know people who crave it. I love spicy food. I'm just saying that the way they do it here is you know, it's Thai hot. You know, these are for palates that were, probably had their pacifiers dunked in sambal oleg and buttermilk. You know, these are not joking around with it. So I love spicy food. I crave it.
I do too. But where it's hot, where it just makes you miserable, I don't see the enjoyment of that.
Well,
but again, different strokes.
Exactly. And different taste buds, different tolerance levels. You know, some people are going to tell you they love and crave scotch. Some people can't stand the smell of it. You know, mm-hmm. it's different tastes, different thresholds. So, you know, but the moral of the story is Thai, secret Thai, Chalmette, really good value, really good fun, good quality.
Jordan just texted me a picture of the spice levels at secret Thai, 0.5 to 5. I guess medium to a half is medium spice, beginner level, 1 out of 5, 0.5 out of 5. 1 out of 5 is very spicy. 1.5 out of 5 is Thai hot. 2 out of 5 is are you sure? 3 out of 5 is please don't do this to yourself. 4 out of 5 is you must be insane. And 5 out of 5 says max level spice for professionals only. I would like to have a taste of, just a little bitty taste of 5 out of 5 just to see. Matter of fact, let me open the lines here at 504-260-1870. What is the hottest thing, the hottest food, not fire, but spice-wise, the hottest food you've ever had? Somebody texted and said you need to sweat while you're eating. Why? Why would you like that? But again, not criticizing, just confused, that's all.
Listen, people, I'm not putting it down. Some people get a visceral joy out of it. And
would
again,
you taste
like
five out of? Would you taste 5 out of 5? Would you take a taste of it? Just a little bitty taste?
Yeah, I would. I would take a little taste. I would not order an entire dish.
Right.
Seriously, if somebody else at the table was a complete pepperhead, and they're like, "We're getting we're getting the papaya salad 5. I don't care. I'll sign a waiver, and it might come down to that. Seriously, I would try a strand or two of the papaya with that treatment.
Yeah,
would
you like a taste of mine? You'll have to sign a waiver first. No, I don't think so. I appreciate the offer, but no, I will not be tasting nor signing the waiver. All right, let's talk about the original Fiorella's Cafe. What's going on there?
Another great one. A lot of people will remember this name, Fiorella's Cafe. It was down on Decatur Street for ages. The family actually had a grocery in Central City before that, kind of a long tradition of Italian families going through the grocery business and into the restaurant business. And it served the French market in particular, the French market vendors back when that was sort of more of a scene. Plate lunches, po' boys, fried chicken, that's what it was known for. Years ago, the original family got out of it. The restaurant was run by somebody else that eventually closed in the French Quarter. But lo and behold, the original family, the original Fiorella's Cafe, returned in Gentilly on Franklin Avenue up there by that cluster of other gas stations, the restaurants over there. And it's fantastic. It's like a classic New Orleans neighborhood restaurant. And it's a little bit Italian, a whole lot New Orleans, plate lunch specials, you know, meatloaf, macaroni shells with the family Italian sausage recipe, and a sandwich they call the Stromboli, but which I've never seen another Stromboli like this. In my experience, the Stromboli is sort of like a calzone with a little better form. It's, you know, it's folded over, basically, you know, a pizza turned into a turnover. And at the original Fiorello's Cafe, Stromboli strongly resembles a muffaletta made on the same bread, but instead of the usual muffaletta fillings, it's that family recipe sausage sliced thin as if it was salami, mm-hmm. Yeah, topped with I think it's pepperoni, provolone, raw red onions, raw green peppers. You get that crunch, and then run through the oven, toasted. And if you, much like a muffaletta, if you get a half, you're really getting two sandwiches, and a half is still something like $12 there. So you that's something you'd want to split, or, you know, eat half and then take the other half home, or tell yourself you're going to eat half, but really eat the whole thing and just sort of hate yourself a little bit, but actually be really pleased with yourself because you're a big strapping lad or lady, and you put it all away.
Speaking of big strapping lad, have you ever heard Stromboli do La Traviata? Oh, it'll bring tears to your eyes. It's beautiful. It really is. Got to take a break here. Mark Rosa texted in, who listens and is going to be on tomorrow with Managing Your Money. Said he had a Tabasco ghost pepper one time that was ridiculously hot. Have you ever tasted that, Ian?
Yeah, that's up there. But that's not Thai hot. That's still
really?
Louisiana hot. Yep.
Wow. All right. What's the hottest thing you've ever had? Somebody texted in, Mario Wings at Wings and Things in Houston, hotter than hot. They won't even serve it to you on your first visit. Tell me, I want to hear from y'all. Let's do a little survey here, 504-260-1870. What is the hottest food that you've ever eaten? Again, we're talking about seasoning here, not spice, not a temperature here. We're talking about seasoning, 504-260-1870. 937, 23 till 10, traffic now, WWL. It is 9:44, 16 till 10. Man, I could talk to Ian McNulty, just shoot the breeze with him for hour upon hour, hour after hour after hour, and just have fun doing it. We're talking about eating and drinking today because he was not available tomorrow, but he's nice enough to give us an hour of his time today, which we deeply appreciate, and there's nothing, I'm sure, that aggravates him like, you know, doing some well-researched topics on cheap eats and bargain restaurants. And then I kind of to hijack the topic to what's the hottest food you've ever had. And let me clean this up. Mark Rosa didn't have a ghost pepper. He had a scorpion pepper. Have you ever had one of those, Ian?
Oh, that's a pepper of a different color. No, yeah. I've not, actually. I've not had that one.
And I asked him why, and he says a new product, but, you know, so is, you know, some kind of paint remover. I wouldn't eat that. somebody texted in about Bayou Beast Wings at Bayou Hot Wings and Nola Hot. Somebody else texted me about a YouTube show, Hot Ones. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
Celebrities tell me about the show.
Oh, yeah. They take, you know, some well-composed celebrity, and then you see them basically melt like the villain in Raiders of the Lost Ark as they continue to eat progressively hotter wings and just get sloppier and sloppier, and the composure just falls away. It's pretty funny.
I'd like to get you on that show. I would love to see Ian McNulty. You know what, y'all? Start a grassroots campaign to get Ian McNulty on Hot Ones. Would you go on?
Absolutely.
Okay. Somebody said the hot mustard at a Chinese restaurant. First time I spread it all over my egg roll, I seriously thought I was going to die. Somebody else said Pepper Bang. X, hottest pepper on earth. I don't know if they've eaten it or not. I was down for an hour, apparently, so they did eat it. Indian lamb vindaloo, you know anything about that?
Yeah, that's a classic dish at lots of Indian restaurants. And, you know, vindaloo on Indian menus is going to signify a hotter preparation. Depends how on the kitchen, but vindaloo is typically hotter. It's traditionally made with lamb. You're not going to find that at any one restaurant. You're going to find them at many, many, many restaurants.
Fall, phall curry, spiciest thing I've ever eaten. Had it at a Bangladeshi restaurant in London. Barely lived to tell the tale, despite the unbelievable heat. It is also incredibly flavorful. I don't know how you can taste it, though, beyond the heat.
well, that's the balance. You know, that's where it becomes the craft of using chili peppers and heat instead of just throwing the cabinet at it. You know, and like I said, different people are going to register these things differently. For some people, it gets the heart pumping, the glands are pulsing. I mean, this is a visceral physical reaction that they crave. And I get a bit of that at the spice level that I enjoy. It's different thresholds for different people.
Since I've hijacked the conversation, let me continue to fly the plane. When it comes to wings, what do you think makes for a great wing, in your opinion?
Let me just say this too, Tommy. I think this is really funny that we're having the conversation about hot, spicy food on the eve of St. Patrick's Day, when usually the questions are about corned beef and cabbage and fish and chips, and, you know, signaturely bland.
Bland
delicious.
Food, exactly, right.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a second.
A great chicken wing, I want it to be big. I want it to be meaty. But it doesn't
the
have
sauce,
to be,
more importantly,
you know,
I'm talking about the sauce.
Big.
Well, since you went wing, let's go flat or drum.
I'm a drum guy. A drum guy. Because I like that pull of that muscle. The flats have their own pleasure of extracting the meat from around the bone work. Mm-hmm. But I just like that big bite. And I like a big fat wing like they serve at Blue Oak Barbecue. They smoke them and they might do they get like a Kung Pao flavor rub on it that's pretty tasty. But then on the other side of the spectrum, you know, Fat Harry's. Give me a bar boat of those just hot sauce slathered wings. They're on the small side. You got a stack of like 20 of them or something. There's some sports on that you're marginally paying attention to. Just covering your hands and face with that sauce. Terrific.
What are you watching?
Fat Harry's probably just a beer.
Okay.
This is the thing about wings is they take whatever you put on them. You know, they're vehicles, they're vessels for it. Shout out earlier to Bayou Hot Wings. That's on Claiborne Avenue across from Tulane University. Fantastic. They have great range of sauces, including some kind of drawing from the owner's Vietnamese heritage. You can also get, fried gator or fried frog legs with the same sauces. So that's fun.
I like it where it's got to be almost when you – it's hot, but it's vinegary as well as hot and almost takes your breath away when you inhale it. Yeah, the smell of it. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's that punch in the nose that you're like, you're the person who was talking about the Chinese mustard kind of nails it. That's it's not that lingering heat that coats your mouth, which you would get at Secret Thai, which you would get with a really good vindaloo. But it's that snap right in your nose, almost like something cracked open.
It's amazing how times have changed, too, with that, because way back in the day, the guy that was the Cajun cook, and he was originally from Texas. I can't remember his name right now, but he had a cooking show, and he would tell a joke about a couple that was married so long they were on their second bottle of Tabasco. And it used to be an accurate joke, but not anymore, because people like hotter food. Somebody wants to know really quick about Paladar 511, thinking about having dinner there. What do you know about that restaurant?
Terrific. Italian restaurant, modern Italian, down in the Marigny. Cool, kind of hip setting, big open format, old warehouse building, open kitchen, loud, bustling, energetic. The arancini there, you know, the Italian rice balls stuffed with mozzarella is fantastic. The pizza is really good. They'll do a tuna crudo. And the bolognese is first class there. Nice wine list. It's real fun. It's got a great brunch, too, by the way.
All right. It's 9:50, 10 till 10. We got to get to Irish food since it is St. Patrick's Day weekend. If y'all want to know more about Ian's great broke after Mardi Gras local New Orleans restaurants that are great for cheap eats, we don't give the whole thing away here, but you can go to NOLA.com and find the story. Right, Ian? That's the best way to find it?
Yep. NOLA.com.
And some
right up for my Instagram.
Beautiful pictures as well. And these lamb chops. The only thing got me about lamb chops as opposed to steak, lamb by nature are smaller, so you got to eat a lot of them, huh?
Yeah, it's like the wings of the range, you know, your lamb wings, your chicken wings,
buffalo,
your lamb chops.
If buffaloes can have wings, why not lambs? Let's talk about some Irish food as we approach St. Patrick's Day weekend and some local places to get it.
Yeah, it's going to be a little different St. Patrick's Day weekend with the parade sort of in limbo, postponed the uptown parades. But, you know, those restaurants are still all there for you. The bars, you can do a bar crawl if you want it. People ask me all the time about Irish food, fish and chips. Maybe it's more traditionally English than Irish, but the Irish certainly have a claim to them. I love them at Finn McCool's Irish Pub, of course. They'll be slammed on Monday for St. Patrick's Day. But a sleeper hit out there is Avenue Pub on St. Charles Avenue. They do great fish and chips. And the Delicates, also St. Charles Avenue. They fry the fish and the fries, which magically become chips for this dish, in goose fat, which makes a big difference. It's just the flavor of what it's fried in. The Delicates is sort of a dive wine bar with a really good, really good food menu. And I know people are out there, if they haven't asked, they're wondering, what about corned beef and cabbage? Where can I get corned beef and cabbage? Not a dish you normally see in New Orleans restaurants, except at Mandina's. Now, it's their standing Tuesday special, but anticipating this, I did confirm with them before the call that they will serve it, corned beef and cabbage, on St. Patrick's Day, which is a Monday.
And that's not a big dish in Ireland, really, is it?
No, it's not. We've been to Ireland a few times. I've never had corned beef and cabbage there. But I think that's the thing of the immigrant culture. You know, you go to Italy and people are not eating lasagna stacked higher than the Empire State Building. And, you know, these gargantuan combinations of meat and cheese that we enjoy here in the States as Italian food. You know, it's sometimes the book gets translated down from the home country to the new world is like a celebration of stuff and American exuberance of it all that you don't find back in the home country, but it's all part of the tradition. That's why we celebrate the Irish and the Italian heritage this time of year. So
Ian McNulty.
Yep, indeed.
We're
good
out
to
of
be
time.
With you, my friend.
Thank you so much. A pleasure as always. Top of the morning to you and the rest of the afternoon to you. May St. Patrick rise to meet you in the road before the devil and all that stuff, all right?
Cilantro, my friend. See you later.
Hey, that's what I meant to say right there. Thank you. You can find out all about Ian McNulty. Just Google Ian McNulty and all of his stuff will come up. 9:54. We'll see what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.